So you understand, you're not limited by McDonald's, you're not limited by Subway, you're not limited by Starbucks, you're not limited by Apple, you're not limited by Microsoft, you're not limited by Mary Kay Cosmetics, you're not limited by what they have done, but you are blessed because they've done it. And so because they've done it, they have demonstrated you can do this anywhere, anyhow.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Welcome to episode number 100 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, designed to help smart businesses committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing become even more innovative. Yes, blow the trumpets, pop the champagne corks and the balloons. We've reached the magic 100 milestone. Feels good to say welcome to episode number 100. Now, I want to begin by thanking you, my wonderful audience, who have been on this journey with me. I also want to thank, of course, the 85 or so guests that I've had on the podcast. It's been an absolute privilege to interview accomplished entrepreneurs from around the world on the InnovaBuzz podcast and spending often more than an hour with each one, learning about their keys to success. Every one of them has been very generous with their time, their knowledge, and I've learned a lot and been inspired by each one of them. And of course, I've had a lot of fun putting these episodes together. Now, I look forward to talking with many more awesome people on the next 100 episodes, and we already have a number of fantastic interviews recorded and scheduled for future publication. In this very special two-part anniversary episode, I'll revisit the innovation round from some of those interviews. This is a small selection, and I could have put every guest's interview here, as all were just awesome. Now, I chose those that, in my opinion, had valuable lessons that were very specific to marketing. I encourage you to go back to all of the episodes as there are valuable lessons in each and every one of them. Our innovation round, we call it the Buzz, is a series of five questions, the answers to which will inspire everyone and help them do something awesome. So let's get started with part one of episode 100. The first buzz comes from Troy Dean of WP Elevation, who was a guest on episode 12 and episode 36 of the InnovaBuzz podcast. Troy is a very special guest because he's been a mentor of mine for quite a while, and it was on his prompting that I started the InnovaBuzz podcast. Answers, and we'll see where we go. So it's cool. Designed to help our audience learn about, you know, other people who are innovating and leaders in their field and learn from their experience.
Sure.
So what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
That's a really good question. I kind of thought about this before when I was looking at the sheet. I think they need to listen to their customers. Mm. Is the very first thing they need to do, and find ways of delivering the value in a more efficient way.
Yeah.
But I think the number one thing is you have to listen to your customer.
Okay, yeah. That's a theme that's coming through really strongly in all that you're doing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's really great to tie it in with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so the next question you could probably answer at the same. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas and new products?
Listen to your customer. Yeah, listen to your customer and focus on the user experience. Like you really just have to put yourself in the shoes of your customer and say, as the customer is using our product, what happens?
Hmm.
And there are so many ways that you can improve and innovate. I tell you, you buy anything from Apple, and just look at the packaging. Hmm. I mean, no one packages and delivers things the way Apple do. And it's packaging, for God's sake. Who cares about packaging?
Yeah.
Steve Jobs cared about packaging. Steve Jobs cared about the user experience. And that's why Apple products, that's why people who use Apple products become, you know, cultish about Apple, because they They care about the user experience, and it's packaging. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there are opportunities everywhere to make an amazing user experience. You just have to listen to your customer.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good. And I had the privilege recently of spending a lot of time with Tom O'Toole, and one of the things he said that relates to that was about, you know, price and you know, service and experience, the user experience or the customer experience, in his words, you know, that lingers long after the price is forgotten. So
absolutely, of course it does.
So what's your favorite tool or system for kind of driving innovation or for improving productivity?
Well, at the moment, and this could change tomorrow, or it could change this afternoon.
The next shiny object comes along.
That's right. At the moment, it's Infusionsoft.
Yeah.
So Infusionsoft is, for those that don't know, is a CRM, and it you can't even begin to explain how powerful it is, but it is just helping us systemize our processes and automate a lot of our internal systems. So even, for example, when we publish a podcast episode with a guest, we email the guest the link to the podcast episode so that they can share it with their following. And then 2 weeks later, we email them to remind them to come back and look through the comments and award a prize. Well, that's all automated in Infusionsoft now. So what we do is we add the link to their episode into their customer record card in Infusionsoft. We tag them as podcast guest, and the emails just go out automatically, so it doesn't fall through the cracks. We're not relying on some human to put a reminder in their calendar to email that podcast guest. It just happens automatically.
Yeah.
So Infusionsoft is not perfect, but it's fabulous.
Yeah. And if I understand it correctly, you can actually do conditional things there. So, you know, you can trigger those things to go different pathways depending on what, you know, what events might have precurred
absolutely
that.
Yeah, I mean, the easiest example is I'm working with a coaching client at the moment who's got kind of three major things that she teaches. Let's call them apples, bananas, and oranges. You can send out an email to your entire database that basically says, hey, do me a quick favor, tell me, are you interested in apples, bananas, or oranges? And each one of those is a link. And based on what someone clicks on, yep, which link they click on, they will be funneled into a whole new sequence where we just talk about apples because that's what they said they're interested in. Now, apples, bananas, oranges all kind of leads to the ultimate sale, which is a bag of fruit,
yep,
but they got there talking about apples or bananas or oranges. So again, customizing the user experience through your marketing funnel, that really excites me. I mean, I'm a geek, but that really excites me.
Yeah, it is very powerful.
It is.
All right. So what do you think is the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
You know, everyone says constant communication.
Yeah.
I'm going to say contact your customer before they contact you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a failure metric in our business now that if a client emails me or calls me to ask me how a project's going, we failed.
Yeah.
And guess what? It still happens. Mm. We still fail every now and then. But I like my customers to know that we're working on it and that they can rest easy. So make sure you contact your customers before they contact you.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna dovetail that something that Ed Dale said to me yesterday on the podcast. One of the best ways to keep a client on track is to not ask them to do anything. Do everything for them, because the moment you ask a client to do something, the wheels are going to fall off, because they're busy, and B, they're not equipped to do what you're asking them to do. And we were specifically talking about creating content for websites.
Yeah, he said, I was just going to say that's an example.
He said stop asking clients for content. Yeah. They're paying you as a consultant. Just do the content for them.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to take that on board.
Yeah, well, I was going to throw that very example in, because I think, you know, look, most website developers, whether they're in WordPress or anything else, would probably say, you know, getting the content from the client is the biggest holder.
Ah, absolutely.
And in fact, I tell people, you know, usually if you're talking to somebody pre-proposal and they say, well, how long will it, you know, how much is it going to cost and how long will it take, are kind of two, you know, questions they ask fairly early on, and you say, well,
yeah,
you know, we can be pretty quick, but it depends on how quickly you can get the content.
That's exactly right. The answer always is, well, how long it will take depends on how organized you are,
yeah,
and how much it will cost will depend on how long it will take, which, yeah, will depend on how organized you are.
Yeah. So the last couple of times I've actually gone back and I said, we'll organize the content for you. So I've taken that advice.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's right.
Great advice. All right. Well, finally, what's the number one thing you can do to differentiate yourself, or anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
That's a really good question. You know, just I learned this from Dan Kennedy. Dan Kennedy says, if you want extraordinary results, do the opposite of what everyone else is doing. And I think it's so true. I mean, and I'll give you one very practical example. And this ties in a little bit with innovation. If a client emails or a lead emails or calls up and says, oh, you know, we need to talk to someone about a new website, most web freelancers will say, okay, no worries. Well, I've got some time next week. Do you want me to come over and meet with you? And, you know, they'll go and have a meeting with the client. And I just don't think that works. I think that model's completely broken. So what I do now is I say, more than happy to talk to you about your new website project. I need to see if we're a good fit for each other. This is a canned response email, by the way, yep. that they get. And that just drives them to a worksheet inquiry form on the website that they fill in. Now, if they fill that in, most people don't, if they fill that in, which is telling in itself, if they fill that in, I'll look through it, and if the responses make sense and I think we can actually hit a home run with this client, I will then email them three times, three opportunities. Next week, Tuesday at 10 o'clock, Thursday at 10 o'clock, and Friday at 1 p.m., I've got some time to meet with you, and usually it'll be online. It'll be an online meeting. Pick your time if you want to get on Skype and chat with me. And I'm just filtering out people who are not a good fit for us, and I'm using technology to automate the whole process. So really, the first thing I get is an inquiry form filled in, and I look at it and go, oh, yeah, I reckon we can hit a home run there. I want to get on Skype and chat with this person. And I flick them a canned response email. I might not hear from them. If I do, great. I know they're qualified, and I know that we're probably going to have a good time working together. So that's, you know, no one's doing that because everyone's optimistically running around having meetings, and that's fine. I'm happy for them to do that, but it's not the model that I'm in. And I deliberately chose doing what I'm doing now because no one else is doing it. So that was just a way of differentiating myself. Turns out it's a good positioning exercise as well, but that was kind of a byproduct, really.
Yeah. No, that's great advice to sort of do something different, but it has to be something that makes sense, obviously.
It does.
But do it differently to others, yeah.
It's basically the reason that I adopted this model is because it's kind of like the specialist model. You know, you can't just you try and make an appointment to go and see a kidney specialist. You need a referral from your GP, which means you've got to go and see your GP first, and then the specialist will tell you when your appointment is.
Yeah.
You don't get to pick your appointment, right?
Yeah, but it could. Could I have a meeting with you to find out how much a kidney transplant will be?
Exactly.
Thank you, Troy, for those messages about listening to your customer, about delivering them exceptional value and doing that in a way that is profitable and efficient and also different to what everybody else is doing. Our next buzz today is with Dori Clark, the author of Reinventing You and Standout, who includes in her list of clients impressive companies like Google, Microsoft, the World Bank, Morgan Stanley, the Ford Foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, to name just a few. Now, Dori was my guest on InnovaBuzz episode number 15. So I guess the first one is, what's the number one thing people need to do to be innovative?
Well, so in my book Stand Out, I actually have a section where I talk about the importance of combining disciplines, and I profile a number of different folks. One of them is a guy that I did some consulting work for named Eric Schott, who is recognized as really one of the top scientists operating in the world today. He's written more than 200 peer-reviewed papers. He's weighed in and had important research on everything from Alzheimer's to diabetes. And the interesting thing is that even though he is a biologist now, he didn't train as a biologist. He originally, his background was in math and in computer science. And what has made him distinctive is that he was one of the first people that really brought big data to bear on biology. And so that's a perspective that a lot of people who were trained traditionally in biology wouldn't have had, and in fact didn't have. They were pretty skeptical of him at first, but he's been able to have huge results because of that. So training across disciplines, bringing in insights from different disciplines, is something that I would really recommend as a spur to innovation and creativity.
Yeah, Yeah, that's really great advice, because I've seen a lot of good examples of that, like the one you mentioned, where people bring a completely different perspective to a field and add huge value to it that others are not able to add. Yeah.
Mm.
Okay, so what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
So for me, one of the best things that I've done to develop new ideas, I think it's always good to play to your strengths and to play to your interests. And so for me, it's really through reading. In the early days of my business, I didn't get an MBA. My graduate degree is in theology, but the way that I learned about business was that I was the best customer the library ever had. I literally just checked out hundreds and hundreds of books and was reading constantly. And I mean, now I have a lot of friends that are business authors. And so, tip for people who have friends that are business authors, buy the book, don't get it from the library. Yeah. But when I was young and poor and struggling, I would just check out reams of these books so that I could learn from the best thinkers. And you read hundreds and hundreds of books in a subject, and you'll get good pretty fast.
Mm. Yeah, that's great advice. Reading, and of course these days with the electronic gadgetry that's around, it's so easy to carry hundreds of books with you. You can almost have a library in your pocket, can't you?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah.
So I know a friend of mine that we sort of have regular catch-ups for coffee and chat and compare notes on how we're doing, and he always has a book with him in a backpack, a proper physical book, and so if he gets to the place we meet before I do, he'll be sitting there reading his book and says, I always carry a book. And I'm more of an electronic gadget type person, so I carry my gadget with me, my tablet, and I say, yeah. Well, I've got about 50 books there. The only challenge for me is that I start reading one and then I jump to the next one, and so I've got about 10 half read.
That's right. Yeah. Tempting.
Yeah. All right. So, what do you think is the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Well, a lot of people swear to certain technical solutions, in terms of project management software. You got Basecamp advocates and Asana advocates, things like that. Mm. Those are good, useful tools to have. I actually just wrote an article for my Forbes blog about a guy named Phil Simon, who wrote a book called Message Not Received. And it's about, how business communication is getting all messed up. And a point that he makes is that a lot of people use email as a project management tool, just like, hey, what about this? Or where are we on that? And he says, that is not the way to use email. Email is going to kill you if you use it that way. You need to use a project management software if you are tracking something that is complicated, that has multiple people, that has multiple, deadlines, etc.
Yeah. But I guess, that touches on that communication is really the key, isn't it? But I know I'm still in the process of weaning my team off, send me a daily email because I want to know what you're doing, but because they're remote. Put all the information, we use Asana as our project management tool, so put all the information in there because otherwise it just gets buried in my email.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so it's exactly what you say. It sort of gets lost and you're actually not very efficient. All right, so... So now this is a very relevant question, I guess. What do you think is the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Yeah, how can they stand out,
in other words?
Yeah. So my favorite answer to this, the thing that I think is really critical and has been personally very critical to me, is content creation. Mm-hmm. Basically what I mean by this is that you can be the best thinker in the world. You can have the best ideas in your head. You can be the most insightful, consultant, accountant, lawyer, web designer, whatever it is. But if you do not somehow put your ideas out there and communicate them to other people, no one will ever know if you're any good. You have to start writing about them. You have to start talking about them, giving speeches, doing webinars, doing podcasts, writing blogs. If you do that, other people, your knowledge will become manifest and they can see it and they can say, oh, I love the way he thinks. I'm going to hire him. Mm. But until you do that, no one's really ever going to know.
Well, there you go. I think that was just absolute gold-plated, platinum, whatever.
A lot of great advice there from Dory about how you can stand out and be recognized. One of the key messages is about creating content that delivers value to your audience and shows how you can help them. Today's Next Buzz is with John Warrilow, the creator and president of the Value Builder System and author of Built to Sell and The Automatic Customer. John appeared on episode 23.
So the first one, what's the number one thing anyone needs to do, you think, to be more innovative?
Sell less to more people. One of the things that I think people make the mistake of, and entrepreneurs make the mistake of, is they sell way too many things to too few customers. Hmm. And I think to be more innovative, what you really need to do is try to find one thing that you're going to be the best in the world in, and focus in on selling that to lots of customers. Innovation, I think, it's iterative. And I think, you know, when you look at tremendous products, whether it's the iMac or, I'm trying to think of other good examples, the Apple Watch, et cetera.
Yeah.
It's really just small improvements on an existing product. And I think that's really innovation. But the only way you do that is if you're selling a fewer things and you're really focused in on getting it right with just a couple of things.
Yeah, that's right. That's great advice. And it's often counterintuitive to what most businesses do, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products?
I go around asking what would make this better, and at my, you know, I'm trying to teach my kids about entrepreneurship right now, and I've tried to distill it down to them to this idea of just kind of going through life saying what would make the situation better. So whether you're waiting in line at a fast food restaurant, or whether you're driving in the car, or typing an email, just keep asking yourself what would make this situation better. And I think that's where innovation comes from. It's just always being curious about making a slight improvement on whatever, wherever you are. I think that's when you start to see ideas start to come to life.
Hmm. That's a really powerful question, isn't it? And it can apply to situations, it can apply to products, it can apply to a whole range of things, can't it?
It can.
Hmm. All right. And I guess you've sort of answered this question, but do you have a favorite tool or system for helping you be more innovative?
Evernote. So I use Evernote. I've got it installed on my iPad, my iPhone, both my computers. It's everywhere. It's all synced up. So whenever I have an idea, I tag it with a tag, and if I want to continue riffing on the idea, I'll grab my phone. If I happen to have my iPad sitting around reading a book and I think of an idea, I can find the same note and add to it. So it's a tremendous, idea sort of distilling and curating software.
Yeah, I love Evernote. It's essentially an electronic notebook, but it allows you to do so much more, like you say, tagging and revisiting things, finding things, and so on. It's great. What do you see as the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Oh, I don't like clients, so I can't tell you about a client because I'm a huge believer in not having clients instead of creating recurring revenue.
Yeah.
So you don't have
that's right. Yes, you talk that. About customers, right?
Customers and also having sort of systems that recur. So I think not to be too self-serving, but creating a subscription model where a customer agrees up front to a set of services in advance is the best way to keep them on track. You're stripping out any ambiguity to the relationship, and you're saying, look, we're going to do these three things, and in return, you're going to give us this every month. And it's a very clear set of deliverables in return for an amount of money. And I think that forces you, when you publish that and you commit to that, then you'll stay on track, they'll stay on track. And I think that's that's the best way to do it.
Mm, yeah, well, that's not surprising that's the advice, but it's good advice. Okay, so what's the number one thing people can do to differentiate themselves as an innovator or as a leader in their field?
Well, to me, differentiation comes down to, you know, two attributes. Does it make you different? And do customers care? And those two bars, although simple to say, often can be very difficult to climb over. So number one, do customers care? Is how you're differentiating yourself, is that something customers care about? Like, just because you're the only one-legged web designer from Tahiti, that's interesting, that makes you different, but nobody cares about that. Whereas there's lots of things that you could differentiate yourself on that people don't care about. So what you've got to do is find something that people care about, but at the same time, it still makes you different. So, for example, a plumber, if you Google plumber Wollongong or plumber Melbourne, you'll find there's 50 of them that show up, or 500 of them, and most of them will say reliable in their text in Google. So that's important to customers who hire plumbers, but it's also not differentiating. So you've got to find something that both makes you different, as well something that customers care about. And that's really finding something that meets those two criteria is tricky.
Clearly, John is a big fan of generating recurring revenue and points out that it does create increased value for any business. Today's Next Buzz is with Ian Altman from the Same Side Selling Academy, who was my guest on both episode 39 and episode 97. We talked about innovation and sales leadership, how to sell innovation, and perhaps most importantly, how to ensure that you produce, that what you produce and what you sell is what your customers really want and need. Sound familiar? I think there's a theme there. Just to remind our audience, the Buzz is our innovation round designed to help our audience who, are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, but deliver some tips from your experience. So we've got five questions that we're going to ask. So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
To be more innovative, I'd say just be entirely focused on what problems your clients need to solve. And if you do that, you will help them find things, and you'll help create new opportunities that no one had thought of before.
Mm. Yeah, great advice. I love that. And I think last time you said something very similar. So that's good. Good to be consistent. Number two, then, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
You know what? It's a very similar answer, which is I'm constantly listening to my audience and my clients and getting feedback. So anytime, like, for example, the Same Side Quadrants came out of talking with clients about the best way to implement Same Side Selling in a repeatable way for them. And the way we came up with the client vision pyramid was a similar thing, which is, well, how do we position against these other companies? And it was just listening to what people wanted. That's what's helped create the greatest things.
Mm. Yeah, great advice, listening to feedback. And so how do you go about getting that feedback or understanding that feedback to put it in a different light? So often people say, oh, that was a great speech, or that was a great meeting. So how do you then take that to get something meaningful back in terms of feedback?
Well, see, every time I speak, I start by saying, what are the actionable takeaways for the audience? And then how do I deliver those to them? So if you're an attendant, if you're an attendee in my sessions, it's pretty easy. But if you're someone who's an attendee and someone else is speaking, you just want to think to yourself, what's actionable that I can use and how will I apply it? So I've taken these concepts. So what? What can I do tomorrow to start moving this a little bit forward? And great speakers will help do that for you. And the ones who don't just, throw your hands up in the air. Think about how you can apply.
Hmm. Yeah, fabulous advice. All right, what's your favorite tool or system for improving your own productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
So there are two things. So in terms of productivity, I use a tool called Contactually.
Mm-hmm.
And Contactually is a CRM tool that allows you to, in essence, categorize or put people into buckets with specified follow-up intervals. So if you don't do it, it reminds you to.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps me. The other one is from a friend of mine, Neen James, who speaks a fair amount about productivity. And this is the simplest yet incredibly powerful piece of advice. Is she says every day, the first task you should do is on a post-it note, write down the three things that are the most important things for you to get done that day. And just have a pact with yourself that you're not gonna get distracted by other things, and you're not gonna finish your day until those three things are done. And her comment is, there's so many people that go day in and day out without getting the most important things done. If you do it this way, at a minimum, you're going to get the three most important things done every day, which puts you ahead of the rest of the world.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I like that technique. I use something very similar myself. It's the, what I use is a 1-3-5 thing. So I have one that's an absolute must. It's the most important thing. And then three that really should get done as well, and then five. So, you know, in worst case scenario, you'll only get the one done if it's a bigger thing, but you know that you've done the most important one. So
yeah, great.
Yeah, I like the idea of the post-it note, keep it in front of your face. All right. So, and Contactually is great. Yeah. You know, it's something that reminds you not to drop the ball on the communication and follow up with clients.
Yep.
So what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Have the results in mind. So if you're constantly revisiting the results, then any little political discussion or anything else goes out the window, because unless it impacts the results, it doesn't matter. And so when someone all of a sudden brings something up that's on a different tangent, you get to say, huh, well, how does that tie in with these results, or do we need to modify what meaningful results would look like?
Mm.
But simply by focusing on the results, you can make sure that everyone's on the same page, because someone else has to tell you what they're bringing up right now is in the best interest of the results, which often they'll realize it isn't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Wonderful advice, and it ties in so well with the whole idea of same-side selling. Okay, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves? And you've probably told us that a few times during the interview.
Yeah, you know what? And this is boring for people to hear it again, but it comes back to knowing what problems you solve. So the thing is that the mistake that people often make when they come up with these elevator rants is they try to use marketing speak to make it generic and apply to everybody. The reality is that you want to be hyper-focused and incredibly specific about the problems that you solve. And when that happens, you're like a magnet attracting the ideal customers. I've got a client of mine who sells technology solutions. And they used to say they sold to everybody. And now they say, well, it's either professional services firms like law firms or accounting firms, where if their systems are down, it costs them real money. Or it's trade associations, where if their systems are down, it makes them less relevant and they have trouble maintaining their credibility with their base. And in both cases, it's organizations who say, look, if I don't have modern technology, then I can't attract millennials to my business. So their message became hyper-focused, and now their biggest problem is that they can't hire people fast enough to keep up with the demand in their business.
Yeah.
And their market has gotten more competitive, not less competitive, but they're growing and just bursting at the seams because their message is hyper-focused.
Yeah, that is such a wonderful story. And I see that so many times, exactly the way you describe it. So people have a fear of niching down and getting to that hyper-focused area because they've got this fear of missing out on something that might be outside of their focus area that they should be niching down to. But every time somebody does it well, the opposite happens. They experience something like what you've just described.
Absolutely, because nobody refers somebody to a great generalist. Mm. You refer people to specialists.
Yeah.
And so if I'm a law firm, do I want to deal with somebody who primarily deals with law firms, or do I want somebody who deals with all sorts of different businesses and they perceive law firms to be the same as everyone else?
Mm.
Like, no, I want people who think we're special and different, even if we're not.
Thank you, Ian. Great advice as always. And that's why we've had Ian on the podcast twice, and we may get him back again in the future. Our next buzz is with Marcus Sheridan of The Sales Line. And of course, Marcus is star of the Riverpool story. In episode 44, he talked to me about content marketing, but primarily about the key principle of solving your customer's problem by educating them.
Cool, fire away.
So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Oh, man. I feel like I've answered this six times because I, you know what? It might frustrate people, but it's just so true. You've got to, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk, people think he's innovative. Actually, he's just a really good observer.
Yeah.
He watches stuff. He watches people. And from the keen observation, the keen eye, he's able to say, I see this happening.
Hmm.
I think this is going to be a big deal. You see what I'm saying? And yeah. This is what the innovators do. The people that see around the curve, they see, wait a second, I'm noticing people are behaving this way. They're asking this thing. To me, that is by far the biggest key to innovation.
Hmm. Yep. That's not surprising, your answer there, but it was worth hearing it again. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas? It might be the same answer.
Yeah. Well, it clearly could be the same answer, but along these same lines, though, some of the best things I've done is interactive communications with prospects, forcing them to tell me how they feel. So, for example, I feel like surveys, even though they've been around forever, we underutilize them, right? Mm-hmm. We don't. I see people go out and do buyer personas, but they've never done a customer survey, like a really true survey of buyers and customers. That's the only way you can identify personas really, really well. Especially if you take somebody that just bought something, right? And you say, okay, so when you're going through this process, what were you stressed out about? That's gold, man. That's gold. Why did you choose the company you chose, and what turned you off about the companies that you didn't like? That's gold. All that stuff's golden, man. If the used car industry had done that 50 years ago, we wouldn't still have 9 out of 10 commercials saying, today, this Saturday, all the biggest, greatest sale of the year. Man, I mean, it's crazy, but that still exists. Why does it exist? It exists because these people are out of touch.
Hmm. Yeah, that's definitely great advice. And those ads really annoy me. So, what's your favorite tool or system for improving productivity and allowing you to be more innovative? I think I know what the answer might be here.
Yeah, I mean, the simple one from a marketing standpoint is HubSpot. I mean, that's for my business. I think it's a great tool. I think people should consider it. I think in terms of my productivity, though, one of the best things that you can do is that you're constantly analyzing what is the 20% of your activities that are producing 80% of the results. This could be in business or this could be in your personal life. Like, what's bringing you the most joy personally and professionally? Now, once you've done that, ask yourself, is it possible to eliminate all the other stuff?
Yeah.
But you have to make lists in order to do that. You have to analyze your behavior. You have to sit there and say, how long did I spend on email today? Well, email sucks. It's a big drain on my life. How can I change that? How can I fix that? Instead of just accepting it for what it is. It's amazing how replaceable we are, but yet we tend to overvalue our, like, the things that we do. Like, nobody else can do them. That's not really true. People could do them just fine if we just let go of the pride element.
Hmm. That's great advice. So the 80-20 rule in practical action, keeping lists and then analyzing behavior. So what's the best way you know that to keep a project or a client on track?
I think one of the most important elements of keeping a project or client on track is to have incredibly honest conversations with them. And what most businesses do wrong is they come out the gate and the client is always, quote, in charge. And because the client's in charge, they never establish a rapport of equality with the client. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. When somebody is vetting our company, I say, look, you need to vet us to make sure we're a good fit for you. I need to vet you to make sure you're a good fit for us. Now, see, everybody knows that, right? But most people don't say it. I come out and say it. And then I say things like this. Now, once this engagement starts, we have one very important rule. The rule is this. You can fire me at any point in time. You don't have to, no questions. You can just fire me whenever you'd like. But also, I can fire you. That's important to me because if you don't do your side, your end of the obligations of the agreement, well, then I have the right to let you go. And so we agree that if one of us is not performing at the level that we expected, then we can let each other go. And you see, most companies don't, like, when you have an engagement, usually you don't have those conversations on the front end. Mm. I have them really, really early. Really, really early.
That's great advice. That's really great advice. And as you say, it's a level of honesty and, you know,
it's a openness. Frankness. It's a conciseness. It's an openness in communication that is really, really nice. And it saves everybody a lot of heartache oftentimes.
Yeah. And it sets a tone that, I mean, I would imagine that it hardly happens that either party fires the other because you've set that sort of tone and expectation up front, and those that aren't up for it will kind of probably pull out at that stage.
Right, which is why you don't have a problem build, and all of a sudden, boom, it blows up in everybody's face and somebody gets fired. Instead, there's an issue. You say, dude, what's going on with this? I thought, what's going on here? And you immediately are addressing it.
Hmm. That's great. I love it. So what's the number one thing then anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
So there's simple things that we can do. I think being incredibly honest and transparent is an amazing differentiator.
Hmm.
Being an amazing teacher is an amazing differentiator. Saying what you're not is an amazing differentiator. Saying who you're not a good fit for is an amazing differentiator. Specifically, being honest enough to recommend the other way. And so, in other words, usually we like to say what we're for. We got to say what we're not for. We like to explain. We always just look at one side. But if we're really understand communication and building trust, we always give reasons why they wouldn't engage us, why they wouldn't buy our stuff, who it's not a good fit for. And that makes you very, very different, but also appeals very much to the person that is looking for an honest company to engage.
Hmm. That's great recommendations, or a great set of recommendations there. And, you know, one of the things that I like to do is if I don't feel somebody's a good fit for our organization, I'll point them in another direction and recommend somebody who I think might be a good fit. So, you know, it's a case of trying to be helpful, even though I don't believe I'm the right person to serve their needs. So that kind of fits into what you're saying.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
Great advice there by Marcus. Of course, educating by providing information is an enduring marketing strategy. It's worked for a long, long time, even before the internet, and it's going to endure much longer. The next buzz on today's episode is with Chris Marr of the Content Marketing Academy in the UK, who has been on the podcast on two occasions, on episode 45 and episode 87. Now, Chris shared with us his philosophy of learning and educating at the same time while building relationships by consistently delivering great value.
So I'm going to ask a series of five questions, and hopefully you're going to give us some really insightful answers that inspires everyone and gets them doing something awesome.
Cool, no pressure then, right?
Yeah. So what do you think the number one thing is anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. I mean, I always think about innovation as like something new, right? Something that someone's never done before. But for people in small businesses or small to medium enterprises, I don't think that strictly could be the case. I think the number one thing that you need to have for to be more innovative or to sort of embrace innovation is to, or to be more innovative, generally speaking, is to have ideas, right? Is to have more ideas and allow yourself and give yourself permission to create ideas, make time for it. So I think that's a key thing, is new ideas, wacky ideas, any ideas really, and to have that as a culture in your life, in your business, in your organization.
Yeah, that's great advice. I always say to people, you know, innovation is doing something different, but not for the sake of doing it different, but for the sake of adding value and improving on something. So it could be incremental or it could be transformational or kind of disruptive.
Yeah.
So
innovation in a small business, though, like, because you've got to think to yourself, well, what are the majority of businesses in the world are small enterprises, aren't they? They're the ones that kind of make up the bulk of businesses in the world. And you think, well, what does innovation mean to a small business? And it could be simply to do something that other people just aren't doing. For example, like one of the examples that came up this morning in our chat in our forums was Twitter video replies. Right now, Twitter video has been around for a long time. You can tweet a video to someone. You've been able to do that for maybe a couple of years now. But no one's really tapping into Twitter video replies. So would you say that's innovative or just resourceful, right? So, or is it an innovative way to use Twitter? And it probably could be classed as somewhere in there, I think. As you've not invented it, you didn't invent the actual thing.
That's right.
But you've kind of done it differently. You've done something slightly different. And I think that's what I think innovation means, I think, in small businesses, to kind of do something slightly different, or do it better, do it faster, do it a better quality, something like that.
And adding value to somebody.
Yes, hugely.
Yeah. All right. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Yeah, ideas are key. They're currency. I think the best thing I ever did was read The Idea, Becoming an Idea Machine by James Altucher. Listened to it on audio, read the book a whole bunch of times, and like one of the exercises in that book is he gets you to write down 10 ideas every single day, and I did that. I don't do it every day now, but I did it for every day for a long time, and I still do the practice now, which is like, for example, someone messaged me on Instagram today saying that they would like to think about how they could incorporate subscription into their business. So one of my tasks for later on today is to give them 10 ideas, so that those 10 ideas I'm giving them away, but by just exercising that idea muscle, I can think of ideas really, really quickly now. And over a period of time, you get better at thinking of better ideas as well. So the idea of Becoming an Idea Machine by James Altucher was kind of like a catalyst there. Just me kind of like really sort of just starting to understand how important ideas are. And you know how you meet people who are just like ideas people. They'll just fire tons of ideas at you. Like those are the people that you need to be around. And it can have its own problems because, you know, you need to figure out which ideas are the best ideas. So that's the next step.
Right, yeah.
But you can allow yourself to think of crazy ideas, like, and just allow that muscle, that idea muscle, to be exercised. It's really, 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 really important, especially now when everybody's done everything. So how can you do something just a little bit different? You've got to get the ideas. And the one thing I've learned by doing this is that, see, when you're thinking of 10 ideas, when you get to idea 7, idea 8, 9, and 10 are really hard. So, but that's you doing the exercise, you know, that's you pushing yourself. So I think that's a great exercise to go through. So for example, I do it all the time. I'll even go into Snapchat sometimes and say, hey, you know, give me a challenge you're having just now. I'll come up with 10 ideas for you. I put in my proposals for consultant. I'll come up with 20 ideas for you, or whatever. So it's kind of like, I think it's a really good skill to have, and it's a skill that anybody can do, or anybody could have if they practice it. But I just think it's massively important for innovating and to come up with fresh and new approaches.
That's great advice. So I've just opened up the Amazon Kindle store here, Becoming an Idea Machine by Claudia and James Altucher.
Yep.
And I think Claudia is the author, according to this. Yeah, so we'll have a link to that in the show notes. But I see that cover and it looks familiar, so I wonder if I've got it in my collection, but I don't recall reading it.
Yeah,
it's the sort of thing I would probably download and add to my collection. I've got probably hundreds of books in my Kindle thing, and you know, there's about 80% of them still to be read.
Yep, yeah. I know the feeling.
Now, I actually find it easy. I actually find the first couple hardest. Once I get going, and then my mind seems to work that way. Once I get going, there's sort of ideas keep popping in. Cool. It's a real problem when something comes into my head when I'm in the middle of the night, when I want to get back to sleep, then I can't sleep because the ideas start to come in.
Yep. Mm. Exactly. I think we all kind of suffer from that as well. But I think the key thing is just trying to think of different things. I think you're probably going to speak about it later on as well, but I think you need to get out of your own sort of like your own frame as well. Like, you know, I think a lot about content marketing and business, but like, you know, you're not going to do anything different there if you're not exposing yourself to different things, you know, like different books and different podcasts. So instead of listening to content marketing or business podcasts all the time, I should really go out and listen to something entirely different, or read a bunch of books that other people just wouldn't read, you know, a book on or a book on like someone's autobiography that's not from a business background, or just anything really that's going to inspire you in a different way. And it can be really interesting. You'll learn something, but it also kind of like gets you thinking just a little bit differently as well. So I think having ideas is great, but having ideas from different different sources are good too.
Hmm. All right, that's great advice. So what's your favorite tool or system for improving your productivity and allowing you to be more innovative?
Oh, so many tools. For being productivity is a tough thing. I'm not sure what the answer to that is. I think like there's a couple of things that help me to be more productive. One is really taking advantage of time driving. So audiobooks and podcasts are like, I know it's not a tool, but you've got a lot of time there to kind of like learn or do something. So audiobooks are really key. I think what like really transformed productivity. That's a really good question. Tool wise, I have to say, I don't know. Evernote's probably been the one tool I have used for 5-6 years, maybe. I use it every single day to capture all my notes. Getting Things Done, the book GTD by David Allen, I think's probably had a massive impact on me as well over the years. I read that back in 2009, maybe 2010, maybe earlier than that, and that had a massive impact on me about how, you know, only paper being touched once in the office and making sure you're capturing everything in the right places. So those sort of like philosophies have probably been more impactful than any one tool has been, because I think this is a big thing actually with especially in the entrepreneur space or the business space, is the tools. There's so many tools, you know. That's and right. At the end of the day, actually, productivity has got nothing to do with the tool that you put in place. It's got everything to do with your own systems and processes, and then how the tools can actually help you be better at those things. I think that's the first step. The first step is to be productive, and then the second step is to put systems in place to help you be more productive, I think.
Yeah, that's great advice. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of getting things done. I think I discovered that in the early 1990s, and I've read one of the first editions. So I've been practicing that since then, although if I have a look at my desk at the moment, I probably need to have one of those.
I honestly believe that productivity is like that one massive resistance that we all suffer from. Like, you could go through periods of months probably being really, really good, and then all of a sudden you're like, it falls away for some reason, and you just need to get back, pick up the book again, you know, and you get back on it the next day. So
that's right. Yeah,
yeah. I don't want people beating themselves up all the time for not being productive, you know, because have bad days.
It is a case of focus, though, isn't it? And you kind of hinted at there's so many shiny tools out there for small business to kind of get distracted by.
Yeah, one of the things I was talking about recently on that one was really, like, for example, we've got the membership site there and everything, and people are saying things like, you should use Infusionsoft, you should be using HubSpot and all the rest of it. And I'm like, I don't even know I haven't even figured it out, like, manually yet. How am I supposed to figure it out? You know, I haven't figured it out manually yet, so how's a system going to help me right now? I need to map this. I need to figure out what works first, and then I'm going to make it look good, you know? And I think that was, I can't remember whose quote that is. Someone did say that. It was, make it work first, then make it look pretty, basically, was what they kind of... Yeah.
Well, that was actually one of the big messages that was given to us at this mastermind last week that I mentioned, and I hope that's in the good part of the interview, not the bit that I end up cutting out, but the message was, you know, don't automate stuff and don't use a shiny new tool to do stuff until you've figured it out manually.
Yeah,
you know, do it manually first, get it right, get the process right, and then when you need to scale it and, you know, you can't get on top of it manually anymore, then, you know, put it into a tool. But
because the danger is, as you start putting all these systems and processes and tools together, and you haven't sold anything yet, like, that's the worst thing you could possibly do. So you need to make sure that the market actually wants what you have first, and then you figure out a way to scale. Absolutely. I think that's absolutely key,
and that's a good message too. Make sure you can sell.
Yeah, that's a solid message.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen it too many times.
Yeah, figure out what the market wants early on before you invest a lot of time and money in building something.
The key book, there's going to be loads of books in this probably, but like, there's two books that popped into my mind there. One is The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. That's a fantastic book for anybody that's kind of like wants to kind of like touch a little bit more on like what we're talking about there. And the whole build, measure, learn cycle and all that, and the minimum viable product. That's absolutely key lessons for anybody in business is that, I would say, is testing the market and making sure you don't like put all your resource into something that's not going to actually sell. And then the other book I was going to mention, Jürgen, as well, is The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, around about the productivity side of thing and resistance. I think if you haven't read that book and you're listening to this show, then you should absolutely go pick it up right now.
Okay, so who was the author of that?
Stephen Pressfield.
Stephen Pressfield.
War of Art.
I'll look that one up and put a link to that in the show notes as well, because I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, well, once you've read it, Jürgen, send me a message.
All right.
Tell me how you feel.
I'll do that. Yeah. Will do. All right. So what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Oh, I saw this. You sent me this question beforehand, and I was like, God, I don't know if I know the answer to this. I think for me, it's client works hard, right? It really is. It can be really difficult to keep on track, keep on the deadlines, making sure your team are performing, making sure that everything's on track, basically, especially if you've got multiple clients, right? Now, I've had a really good think about this over the years. I think the key thing for keeping a client on track is picking the right client in the first place. Someone that really believes in what you're doing, really believes in the value that you want to bring to the organization, is willing to work with you. I think that's where the relationship really starts, I think, is picking the right clients. That's the main thing. And if you can get the right client, then there's a good chance that a relationship is going to work out really, really well for you. And I mean, at the end of the day, the client's paying you to deliver something, and if you deliver what you say you're going to deliver and you meet their expectations, then that's good. Most people can't do that these days. I think that that should work. And if you're trying to keep them on track, then it's about communication every single time. Trying to predict what might be where problems might arise, trying to keep in regular communication with them. So using tools, for example, you could use Slack. We've used Slack for our clients before. Works really, really well. It gets off the email and it opens up the communication. Skype or whatever, video calls are really great for that too. So I think that one is getting the right clients in the first place, and then secondly is having a good solid communication strategy for that relationship to blossom.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people answer that question with communication. That seems to be core to that, but you're the first person that's actually said pick the right client in the first place, and if you think about it, that just makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Yes, I've been, yeah. If anybody that's got a client service type business, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, yeah, you get exactly. A bad client and it can really ruin everything. Like, you can ruin every other relationship you've got with other clients as well, because you're putting so much energy into the one that's taking up all your energy, yeah. And it can
exactly.
Have a
ruin. And you're yeah. Resentful of it, and mm-hmm. Yeah,
it can have a detrimental impact on your whole business.
Yeah, that's brilliant advice. All right, so the last one is, what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
The number one thing you can do to differentiate yourself is to learn faster than everybody else, I think, mm-hmm. Is to make sure that you are always learning something. You're continuing to advance yourself. Most people don't do that. I think that's absolutely key. If you want to differentiate, you've got to continue to learn. Keep looking at things with a critical eye. You know, what's happening here? How's this going to affect my business? How can I help my clients with this? What the trends are? And just be open to learning new things, and be open to never think you know enough. You know, always be humble and learning. I think that's the number one way to differentiate yourself. And if you can do it faster, if you can learn faster, I think that will have a massive impact on your business and your life, and I think it will differentiate you from other people.
I love that. I love it. It's great advice.
Lots of great tips and insights there from Chris Maher, as always. And don't you just love that cool Scottish accent? I could listen to Chris all day, not just for the accent, of course, but for the valuable insights that he does provide. Our next buzz was with Lolly Daskal, author of The Leadership Gap, and according to the Huffington Post, one of the most inspiring women in the world. Now, Lolly was our guest on episode 76 of the InnovaBuzz podcast. So what's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Read. Read every day. And it doesn't have to be a book, but read something that teaches you something new. New knowledge, new wisdom.
I love that. I love that because it aligns with my very strong values of education. So, and I actually do that. I don't quite achieve a book a day, but I certainly spend a lot of time reading. So great advice. So what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas or new products? It's probably the same answer.
Read a book a day. Yeah. It's really changed who I am. Can you imagine, you know, I'm smarter today than I was yesterday, and I've been saying that for over 3 decades.
Yeah. It's pretty. Yeah, that's good, isn't it? Yeah. And now, looking at tools and systems, what is your favorite tool or system for improving your own productivity?
So because I work a lot, and I want to be present, and I want to be of service to others. I'm an old-fashioned gal, so I use Hootsuite for social media in order to reprogram some of my tweets so then I can spend more time being present with others. Hmm. So I upload all my articles in one time, in one shot, but then I spend time saying thank you or, you know, answering some of my messages, and it gives me more freedom. So the discipline is using an app that I can put all my tweets up at once across all social media platforms. So then I could have the freedom to connect and converse with those that talk to me.
That's fabulous advice. I like that because I've spoken to people about using tools to program their social media postings and so on. And people say, well, that's not, that's, against the grain of social media. You're supposed to be engaging with people. I say, no, no, hang on. Posting articles, you can automate and save a lot of time. The engagement you can then spend on that, which is exactly what you say. So if people respond and comment on an article, you can go back to them and say thank you, or you can start a conversation around that.
Right. I think of posting the articles is, if you walk into a home and it has beautiful art, those are the articles. You can stop and read an article. But I'm sitting at the table with you. Come and have a tea with me. Talk to me. That's what it's about. You want to be present on your social media. You want to be able to answer. You know, if people says you want to be on my podcast. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, great. All right, I like that. So what's the best way you know to keep a client on track?
To keep a client on track?
Yeah.
Don't fix his problems.
Ask questions, right?
Ask open-ended questions. One will empower them, one will disempower them. Ask yourself which archetype you want to be, the navigator or the fixer. And the reason I have sustainability for over 3 decades is because I try never to fix someone. Can you imagine if you try to fix someone and it doesn't work? They don't want to work with you anymore, right?
That's right, so yeah.
Navigate through, help them navigate through a problem. Innovate with them, be creative with them, but don't fix.
Excellent advice. Thanks. And finally, what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to differentiate themselves?
It's to find out who they are. Read the leadership gap and discover which archetype you are, which one you tend to lean into, which is your virtue. Because at the end of the day, nobody's going to ask you what you did for a living. They're going to ask you who you were being. And that's, you want to be able to answer that.
Yeah, that's great advice. Yeah, who you are being and what contribution did you make, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So this has been wonderful, and I really appreciate you taking time. And I should give a shout out to Dori Clark, if you're listening. Dori, hello, because Dori introduced us and got us together so that we could organize this podcast. What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field and a leader in innovation?
That's a great question. One of the things that most people want from me is how to do things, how to be the most innovative and how to be the most creative. I'm not that coach for you.
Yeah.
I can give you the how, but for me, the biggest advice that I can tell people is that find out who you are. And when you do, realize that greatness lies within you. You are unique, you are different, you are talented, and you are creative, just like everybody else out there. But the thing is that most of us don't choose it. Most of us don't say it's my destiny. So I'm here to tell you that greatness is your destiny. You just have to choose it. That is the best advice. Once you believe that, then come to me and I'll tell you how to create a successful business. But until you believe that, I don't think it could happen.
Thanks, Lolly. A fascinating interview, and I love the leadership archetypes. I think that's a wonderful metaphor for understanding behavior, understanding strengths, and the concept of standing in your leadership gap and turning that into a strength. Just inspirational. Thanks very much for sharing that with us. At this point, I think it's time to take a break and conclude part one of episode 100 of the InnovaBuzz podcast. I do hope you'll join me on part two, which will have even more from Michael E. Gerber, as well as Kim Doyle, Ali McGill, Christy Faulkner, Kevin Kelly, Phil Singleton, Mike Morrison, and Nina Radetich. Until part two, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and remember, be awesome and keep innovating.